Look, a few things are happening this month which you may be interested in. The first one is dinner tonight. What do you expect? At Naruda's. And this is for people in the CBD and out a little bit out to the west. Or anybody else who likes to come along. 6:30 p.m. start at Naruda's, which is at the corner of Albion and Breeze, B-R-E-Z-E Street in Brunswick. All welcome. You pay for your own food and drinks. Now, if you survive that, the following Wednesday, which is the 15th, according to my maths, we'll be doing a presentation as Anzac Days around the corner. We'll be looking at the real history regarding World War One, a very convoluted history at the Footscray Hotel, 48 Hopkins Street, Footscray. The presentation will be taped or videotaped, and it'll be available on the YouTube channel, which is a historical YouTube channel, josephtoscano.nam. There's plenty of radical Australian history presentations there. Have a look at them. Learn about your past. Because you know, as they say, a society that doesn't remember its past has no future. That's the 15th. Now, on the 29th, that's right, 29th of April, we'll be having dinner down there at Frankston at La Porchetta. So put that in your diary. And if you are around the city on a Thursday between 12 and 1, public housing, everybody's business vigils take place there from midday to 1 p.m. And then we wander down to the food court at the Paramount just for a bit of a discussion and relaxation. So it's a pretty easy month. But the 1st of May, as you know, is May Day. Talk Back with Attitude team will be doing a special overnight talk back on May Day from 12:30 to about 5:30 a.m. That's right, 12:30 a.m. to 5 a.m. And then at 11 a.m, if I'm still alive after that extravaganza, I'll be doing a tour of important anarchist historical sites. Because you may not know this, but it was actually the Melbourne Anarchists, the first anarchist group in Australian history, which initiated the first May Day here in the city of Melbourne. So there's plenty of things there, and obviously there's plenty of other things you can get involved in, not just the things that we initiate. And you can always join public interest before corporate interest, PIBCI.net. The sacred cows have wandered in. They've got garlands on their heads. They said, no destruction of civilization, only destruction of leaders and rulers, radical cows. That's why they're here for the anarchist world this week. We're almost upon us. The Community Radio Network will be starting the anarchist world this week. Now remember, it is podcast. If you've got people who you like,
minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction, in the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning, death and hatred to mankind, poisoning.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else.
To the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community and Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano. If you wonder what anarchy is all about, no, it's not about what's happening in the world today. Anarchos, simple Greek word which means without rulers. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people as we see every day of our lives? Inequalities in power and wealth. What is the anarchist struggle? The anarchist struggle is to devolve power, share it, possibly through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. So if you're involved in these struggles, whether you call yourself an anarchist or not, you are part of the anarchist community. It's about power and wealth, and it's been about power and wealth since time immemorial, where we've seen groups, through the use of force, impose their will on the rest of society. History is replete with the destruction that rulers cause in the name of maintaining their authority. And the thing about 2026 is it's no different to what it was 1,000 years ago or 5,000 years ago. Now, today I'm going to speak about normalising the unacceptable, because there is a process which a lot of people don't seem to understand. Because, you know the old saying, it's the standard you walk past is the standard you accept. But the trouble is, what is that standard you're walking past? How do you normalise the unacceptable? And I'm thinking of two situations which you'd be familiar with. Auschwitz and the total destruction of Gaza. Obviously, both are totally unacceptable. But the fact is that we had processes in the 20s and 30s and 40s in Europe which normalised the mass murder of millions of people because of their religion, because of their lifestyle, talking about gypsies, because they had disabilities. Remember, the Nazi war machine was not just based on the destruction of the Jewish people. It was also based on the destruction of anybody who opposed their particular the type of society they wish to create. So you don't move from 1 minute mouthing ideas and the next minute creating a whole series of institutions which allow the mass murder of millions. So the problem we face as individuals and as societies is the processes via which we normalise what is normally unacceptable. And you've got to look at Australian history, especially Australian colonisation history, about how the destruction of this country's First Nations people was basically incorporated into the DNA of this nation for over 200 years until the High Court decision in 1992, the 3rd of June 1992, the Mabo decision, finally recognised that this country was not terra nullius, that it was not owned by no one. So as a society, we are capable of normalising the most horrific situation, because we are willing to leave it to the other person to do something about it. We are conditioned to keep our heads down and not lift them above the parapet. We are conditioned to only think about ourselves and our immediate family. We're conditioned to think of the other as the main problem that faces us as individuals and as communities. We're not conditioned to question power, authority, and inequality. Those among us who question power, authority, and inequality are considered to be deviant. Now, although we have made progress in certain areas as a society, we have fallen backwards in many other areas. And I'll give a few simple examples of how we normalise the unacceptable. Now, what's been happening, what the Israeli state has been doing in Lebanon and Gaza to a significant degree, is something which is totally unacceptable. But as a society, we are happy to accept it because we think we can do nothing about it. Bringing things closer to home, think about the fact that we have private charities raising money to send Australian kids to public schools. Totally unacceptable, but it's been normalised. The fact that we believe that anything that is public is somehow second rate. And in many regards, it is second rate because of the lack of resources and personnel which are diverted to the public sector in comparison to the degree of corporate welfare we have in this country. It's totally unacceptable, although it's accepted as normal behaviour, to have legislation which benefits financially people who own more than one home, negative gearing. And what we've seen over the last 30 to 40 years is an increasing ability of people to fight back in terms of identity politics, and we've seen many steps forward in this, in these areas. But when it comes to economic inequality, when it comes to the concentration of power, when it comes to questioning authority, what we've seen is many, many, many backward steps. And every statistical indicator tells you about growing inequality in this country. Every statistical indicator tells you about the amount of public money which is squandered on the corporate sector. Every available indicator tells you that more and more laws have been passed in this country over the last 40 years to marginalise and criminalise anybody who raises objections to what the state is doing, whether it's a trade unionist or whether it's an activist. And the list goes on and on. So the thing about normalising the unacceptable is that you do it one step at a time. And that's what we're seeing with the buffoon in Washington, and that's what we see in this country in terms of the trickle-down economics, which ensures that those with power and wealth continue to become more powerful and wealthy while the rest of the people fight about the crumbs that are brushed off the corporate table in our direction. And that's the key, one step at a time. We normalise the unacceptable one step at a time, and you get to a situation where resistance becomes almost impossible. It's a little bit like the story about the frog in the boiling water. So that's the situation we face. So when do we step in? Do you step in when the bombs are falling? Do you step in when the concentration camps are erected? Do you step in when divided nation is on a roll? Or do you step in much, much, much earlier? To give you a simple example, any of you who do any bit of gardening, if you see a weed coming up and you remove that weed when you see it coming up, you'll never have your fruit and vegetables choked with weeds. But if you ignore those weeds, you will have those fruit and vegetables choked with weeds, and to remove the weeds takes a lot more energy and effort than it would if you removed them when you first saw them. And that's the issue. We need to be able to understand what is happening. We need, as individuals, as communities, as groups, to be able to fight back. Initially, in terms of ideas. Because if we wait to the last moment, the sacrifices that need to be made to change that trajectory of history are particularly difficult. But if you fight back in the early stages, it is relatively easy to derail movements that blame the other for their particular situation. So that's the situation we find ourselves in 2026. We not only normalise the unacceptable, we've now got to a situation where we believe that resistance is pointless. The fact is, we should have been resisting ages ago, and obviously a minuscule minority have been resisting for decades. But the fact is, the great majority of Australians have accepted that the way forward is through deregulation and privatisation and corporatisation and globalisation. We have forgotten that the way forward is to work cooperatively, to put a brake on those elements in society who somehow believe that they are the only people of the authority to make decisions. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Because when you talk about normalising the unacceptable, it doesn't take much thinking to know that what is happening in this country could have been stopped ages ago if we had people in authority and governments that supposedly represent our interest actually representing our interests and not representing the interests of the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Now, obviously, everybody's eyes are focused on Iran and what's happening there and what the Washington buffoon is doing. But the fact is, although the Washington buffoon huffs and puffs, he is a minor player in the atrocities that are occurring in the Middle East, that have been occurring for decades, not just this year or last year or since 2023, that have been occurring for decades in this part of the world. The fact is that the state of Israel has become the number one pariah in the Middle East, if not the world. And the Washington buffoon is nothing more than a little dog being led by the war criminals in the Israeli cabinet. Nothing more. And although to a significant degree, much of the damage that has been caused in Iran by the United States and Israel has to date been limited to so-called military targets, the fact is that what is happening in Lebanon is being totally normalised. What the Israeli state is doing in Lebanon is nothing short of a war crime. Not that war crimes mean anything in 2026, because obviously both the United States and Israel are not party to any treaty which examines war crimes. Now here we have 9 million people dictating the lives of tens of millions of their neighbours by the use of brute force, which is utilised courtesy of the Western world, who feels so guilty about the Holocaust. Now, and yes, we should. But why is it that the people of the Middle East, especially the people of Palestine and Lebanon, are the ones who have been asked to pay the price for the brutality of European policies in the 1920s and 1930s and 1940s, which normalise the destruction of the Jewish people? I've always found that hard to fathom. Now, those of you who think that force is the way forward need to remember Hamas was created as a result of the atrocities which occurred during the Intifada. That's right. It grew out of the ashes of a previous Gaza. Hezbollah was created as a response to the brutality of the Israeli occupation of southern Lebanon for almost 20 years. And the fact is that if we look at history, and Cambodia is a classical example of what happens, if we look at history and we look at societies where we use technology to bomb them back to the Dark Ages, we see some of the most reactionary, revengeful political and social movements being created as a result of that brutality. The Khmer Rouge could never have come to power and slaughtered 2 million of their countrymen and women without the Kissinger-Nixon secret war, which was conducted in Cambodia in the 1960s, which resulted in more bombs being dropped on Cambodia than were dropped in Western Europe and Russia during the whole of World War II. So from the ashes of society that is degraded doesn't come democratic structures. What evolves is authoritarian movements which are only interested in maintaining their power and authority. And to think the Washington buffoon and his so-called advisors didn't understand the story of Vietnam in 68, the Tet Offensive in 68, the fact that the United States of America lost almost had almost 45,000 American soldiers killed, and Australia had over 520 soldiers killed, and the Vietnamese lost almost 3 million people in that particular struggle, which went on for decades, highlights how societies and individuals who don't acknowledge the lessons of history repeat the mistakes over and over and over again. Now, the reality is, I find this interesting, that in 1968, we had men on the moon from the United States of America. At the height of the Vietnam War and the Tet Offensive. And in 2026, we have three men and one woman from the United States and Canada circling the moon in Armistice 2. So maybe if we look at historical precedents, which we don't, maybe we can see an end to what is happening in the Middle East. Let's move on. Subscriptions. You know, capitalism has a wedding vow. You know, when you, if you get wedded in the Western tradition, and I think it's till death do us part. It's supposed to be a contract for life. Till death do us part. Now, capitalism is a dynamic entity. It's about using private investment for private profit, with a little bit of government support, obviously, whether it's legislative or monetary. But we've seen a change in the way capitalism works, and I'm not talking just about social media. See, in the good old days, you went and you bought a toaster, or you bought a refrigerator, or you bought a car, or you bought a piece of machinery, and that was the interaction. You paid, or you paid it off, and it was yours. Forget about inbuilt obsolescence. If you're lucky, there wasn't much. You went on with your purchases, you know. You purchased things. But capitalism has now become our wedding partner. It's become our partner for life. Because what I've noticed, I'm sure what you've noticed over the last decade or two, is the idea of subscriptions, right? You buy a piece of equipment, but it's actually not yours. You need to subscribe. You need to pay on a monthly basis or a yearly basis. And then you need to pay, because it's a smart piece of equipment, you need to pay for digital uploads to ensure your little piece of garbage continues to function. So subscriptions is a mechanism via which the corporate sector wills us to them for eternity. And if you refuse to pay for the latest update, it's like a divorce. You lose the ability to use that piece of equipment. And in many regards, we see this in all aspects of production, and whether it's military equipment, where we talk about the integration of the Australian Armed Forces with the Armed Forces of the United States of America, where we're sold equipment for our mutual defence, and then we find that unless we pay for the software updates, that equipment is just a brick, becomes a brick. It is nothing more than something sitting in a corner, incapable of doing anything. So subscriptions are about marrying you, that's right, to the corporation or the business that has sold you that piece of equipment for life. And if you don't buy those updates, your magic, intelligent piece of equipment becomes a useless brick. So I am warning people, and those of you who think, well, I'll take out a subscription and it's easy to come off, it's very difficult. But more importantly, there are subscriptions and subscriptions. Obviously, you can subscribe, you know, to pay TV. Now, obviously, you can, if you've got the time and the energy, you can cancel those subscriptions. But I'm talking about subscriptions which are based on hardware, whether it's a refrigerator, whether it's a car, that needs software updates. And if you don't pay for those software updates, your particular piece of nirvana becomes a brick. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Just in case you're interested in pursuing these ideas, I suggest you go to the YouTube channel, Public Interests Before Corporate Interests. You can go to the webpage, Public Interests Before Corporate Interests, and maybe join. You can join online. A historical channel for Radical Australian History is josephtoscano.nam. Let's move on. The grunters always pay the ultimate price. Justice done. I'll say it again. The grunters always pay the ultimate price. Justice done. Now, the news on everybody's lips is that a former SAS member has been charged with war crimes. Australia's most highly decorated veteran has been charged with war crimes. We haven't charged Netanyahu with war crimes, or even the buffoon with war crimes, or Putin with war crimes. Although they've been charged, they'll never come. Now, I'm interested in this case. I'm very interested in this case because in many regards, it reminds me of the 1839 Mile Creek Massacre case. What happened during that period, although the genocide of First Nations people was normalised in the colonial expansion in this country, we had elements in the British government who believed or wanted First Nations people to be treated with some respect and treaties to be entered into First Nations people. And after a great deal of pressure applied on the colonial authorities in New South Wales, some of the people who were responsible for the Mile Creek Massacre, one of the most horrific massacres of men, women and old men, women and children that has occurred in this country's colonisation history, were eventually tried on a number of occasions, and seven of the convicts involved, or ticket of leave men, were sentenced to hang and were hung despite protests from colonialists who were involved in expansion of their properties in New South Wales. Huge protests. The grunters were hung. The people who organised the massacre were never charged. And I'm not just talking about people who gave the orders. I'm talking about people who were involved in the massacre, the Mile Creek Massacre. They became respected citizens. Some of them even became police magistrates. And if you look at the historical record when they died 40 or 50 years later, they had a wonderful send-off. So the grunters, that's right, the people at the coalface, paid the ultimate price for the brutality that occurred. But those who participated, who were part of the ruling classes, those who financed it, those who organised the massacre in order to improve their ability to expand their squatted estates, escaped scot-free and became admired citizens in this country. It's the same everywhere else. It's usually the grunters who do the dirty work who find themselves in court. And when the grunters are tried and a verdict is handed down, we're told justice is done. Justice is done. Now, obviously, I'm not here to comment about the trial that's going to go ahead. But I'm very interested in the fact that it's the grunter. That's one of the grunters who's actually facing trial for war crimes. The murder of five unarmed men not involved in combat. It's as if these type of atrocities which were occurring in Afghanistan, perpetrated by special forces, were something which was not condoned by the people, by government of that particular point in time, by their commanding officers, by the method of training which was used to create these units. And what we've noticed is, somehow, as we saw in Robodebt, as we saw in the financial crisis in, I think it was 2018, that none of those that were at the forefront, the designers, those who, you know, organised it all, not one, you know, was prosecuted. So it's all very well to say, you know, this exposure by the media has led to this trial. But the fact is, what we are seeing is what we normally see. It's the grunters who pay the ultimate price. While those who give the orders, those who organise the situation so atrocities can occur, those who turn the other way when atrocities occur, are those that somehow always seem to escape justice. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, I'm going to look at public housing once again. I know it's an issue that kind of bores people, and that's why the organisation I'm involved in is called Public Housing Everybody's Business. Now, we're here constantly. Every day of the week I hear the fact that housing is the main issue facing younger Australians. And I agree, it is the main issue. But what we forget to debate is, why is it the main issue? Why have we created a situation where housing affordability in terms of rental payments and in terms of getting your foot into the housing market have become such huge issues in Australia in 2026? Well, they may not be such a huge issue in other Western countries, obviously excluding the United Kingdom. And the key is that we as a society normalised the idea the private sector does it better than the public sector. We have seen governments at the state and local and federal level wash their hands of the responsibility of providing housing. We have seen legislation which has been pushed through Parliament to give private investors carte blanche in terms of involvement in the housing market. Not just private investors from Australia, but private investors from every corner of the globe. So no wonder housing has become such a huge issue. Now, after World War II, and again I keep saying, you need to know your history. And history is not necessarily boring, but you need to know your history. After World War II, after the death of almost 25,000 Australians, people returned to this country who'd sacrificed, who put their lives on the line to protect this country. And they were housed in tents, botanic gardens in Melbourne, botanic gardens around the country. And what we saw is housing become a huge priority for state and federal governments, and resources were ploughed into the housing sector. And what we saw was the creation of public housing. That's right. The creation of public housing, not just for people in extreme circumstances, but public housing for people who would never be able to afford to buy a home because of their financial situation. And we saw both conservative governments, the Bolte government in Victoria and the Bjelke-Petersen government in Queensland, invest in public housing. Because they understood that public housing is about security of tenure. When you buy a home, if you're able to pay off the mortgage, you have security of tenure. It's not the fact that you own the home, it's the fact you've got security of tenure. What that means is, if you have children, they can go to the same schools, they can intermix with a different variety of people in their particular part of the world. They can go to the same sporting clubs. And as our beloved Prime Minister keeps telling us, he was the son of a single parent on a single parent's benefit, which didn't entail her going to work at when he turned eight, who lived in public housing. And that's what gave the Prime Minister the grounding to become Prime Minister. But today, we have outsourced that responsibility to the private sector. And not only have we done that, but we've gone one step further, and Victoria is at the lead. What we've seen is the wholesale privatisation of what is left of the public housing sector. And when people talk about redevelopment, knocking down the towers, rebuilding, the fact is that 90% of those units that are rebuilt will belong to private sector. And the 10% that are earmarked for social housing or community housing or affordable housing are earmarked for private corporations, private institutions, which manage them on behalf of the government. So the housing crisis is something that was created. And then we have the ridiculous situation where people with a little bit of disposable income were lured into buying a second home and renting out that home because of legislation which gave them an advantage. So we saw a whole financial industry crop up which promoted the idea of getting people to invest in housing. Not as something having a roof over somebody's head, but invest in housing as a commodity via which they could make a profit, courtesy of legislation passed by the federal government. So no wonder we have a housing crisis, especially among young people. And then when you look at it a bit more closely, it gets better. Yeah, well, I'm being facetious. It gets better. Because I'm old enough to remember that I received an education free of any financial burden. And I was able to go to medical school free of financial burden, apart from the burden of, you know, looking after myself. But today, unless you've got parents who've got deep pockets who are, you know, part of the investment class, when you leave university, if you're lucky enough to be in some type, if you're lucky enough to be in some type of job which actually returns some type of profit, you are saddled with a debt which can last for decades. So what financial institution is going to give you a loan if you've got this debt hanging over your head? So people talking about a housing crisis. Yes, there is a housing crisis. But it's not because we have 28 million people living on a continent. It's not because we don't have enough infrastructure to create housing. But it's because we have left it totally to the private sector to provide what is nothing more than an essential component of everyday existence. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, when we created public interest before corporate interests, a number of us about a decade ago, the thing that really struck us as activists was the fact that very few people understood the concept of public. And the great majority of people believe that public was somehow a second-rate institution. They forgot that the word public is about everyone. Yeah, it's about everyone. They forgot. And that somehow, because of continuing government propaganda, the idea that the public sector was actually able to satisfy people's physical needs went out the door. And what we saw is the invasion of the private sector into many aspects of everyday life which had been under public control. But the fact is, this invasion was not due to the private sector somehow having a more efficient mechanism via which to deliver those services, but because of overwhelming corporate welfare. For example, look at the early childhood development area. Look at it. We have 4 to 5 large corporations which now dominate the early childhood development centre service. And they have a super highway to the Treasury. Over 90% of the money they receive to provide this private service, which is interested in maximising returns to shareholders, comes from the Federal Treasury. Let's look at the aged care sector, another sector which was largely in public hands. The aged care sector was privatised during the Howard era. I was going to say regime, but I won't. The Howard era. So why? Now, when initially the Howard government floated the idea of privatising the aged care sector, the aged care people who were interested in taking over the aged care sector said, we can't make a profit unless you remove the ratio between staff and residents. And that ratio was removed. And once again, we've seen large corporations enter the aged care sector. And when we look at the report of the Royal Commission into the failings of the aged care sector, it is 100% due to the privatisation of the aged care sector. I'll give you a simple example. Let's say you have a relationship with somebody, right? And there's two of you in the bed. It can be gender neutral. It can be a gay relationship, lesbian relationship, heterosexual relationship. But there's two of you in the bed, okay? That relationship will have its ups and downs. Now, let's say a third person is invited into the marital bed. Now, that third person needs to be fed, clothed, housed. And that's what privatisation is about. Instead of having a relationship between the public, that's the many, and the state, which provides the resources to provide this public service, whether it's aged care, early childhood development, health, public housing, the list goes on and on. What we have is a third member. And when something is privatised, they need to make a profit to survive. Now, that profit can be bolstered by public money, which we see in all these sectors, but they need a profit to survive. So what's the point of introducing a third entity into that service that demands that it needs a profit? And how do you make profits? Well, you do it in two ways. You screw your staff. And we had the ridiculous situation in the aged care sector and the early childhood care sector where they were given a wage rise, but that wage rise was paid by the taxpayer through the federal government. Or you screw the people who require your service. And anybody who now relies on a private provider for their electricity or gas or anything else, or telecommunications, let's not forget all these services were once publicly owned, now finds that they are having difficulty in paying for that particular service. But more importantly, what has happened are two things which people forget. One, many of the public services that were privatised were making profits. Even Medibank Private was making a profit when that was privatised by the Abbott-led government. Telecom was making a profit when it was privatised. The state's energy production facilities were making profits when they were privatised. These profits would go back into the Treasury to provide funding for essential services in the community. So once you privatise a service, you lose the ability to obtain any profits made that service and use them for others. It's a little bit like having a chook that lays eggs, and one day you get into an argument with the chook and you think, well, it's time you became dinner, and you chop off its head. The fact is it stops laying eggs. And that's what's happened with the privatisation of profitable public services, we've seen the fact that that money no longer comes into the Treasury. What that means is you need to recoup that loss through taxation, not of the corporate sector, which only pays about 22% of taxation revenue in this country, but of pay-as-you-earn taxpayers. Simple. That's one problem with privatisation, the fact that you lose that ability. The second problem, which is something which you're all familiar with, is that you lose the ability to actually put pressure on that private corporation to improve or extend its services. When it's owned by the government of the day, you can put pressure on the government of the day, because they face elections every 3 to 4 years, to improve that service or increase finances to that service. But when it becomes privatised, irrespective of government legislation which is put in place to protect the consumer, the fact is that you have, as an individual consumer, you have no say in how that organisation works and how it provides its services. So, I keep saying on this program, think about it, because ultimately, it's up to you. It's not up to me. It's up to you. As I keep saying, you can continue to remain a paid-up member of the Somebody Should Do Something About That tribe, or a paid-up member of that other huge Australian tribe, has more members than Collingwood Football Club, the I'm Gonna tribe, or you can tear up your membership cards and you can start becoming involved in activities. It doesn't have to be about what's happening overseas, although we are normalising the unacceptable as far as war is concerned. There are many ways you can become involved in activity, but ultimately, if you don't raise your head above the parapet, and yes, it may be blowing off, change is impossible. It's impossible. Change comes when enough people are willing to say enough is enough and refuse to participate in those activities which leaves them behind. You've been listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Yes, I do answer letters. You can write to me at Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. You can email me at anarchistage@yahoo.com or info@pibsy.net. YouTube channels, public interest before corporate interest, historical, radical Australian history, josephtoscano.com. You can join public interest before corporate interest by going to pibsy.net. Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. Or you can leave your home and join us at one of the dinners we have around the city of Melbourne and its environs. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station. Remember, nobody can destroy us. We are the only ones who can do that by doing nothing to change the situation we find ourselves in.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.